Welcome to Diabetes Unplugged. Welcome back to Diabetes Unplugged, the podcast where we shine light on life beyond the diagnosis and dare to redefine the way that we approach diabetes wellness. I am so excited for this conversation today because I am here with Diana and Jose of the Type 2 Diabetes Revolution. Now, Jose is an exercise physiologist and Diana is a registered dietitian. And together they have joined forces to help individuals living with diabetes to naturally reverse this condition by focusing on and addressing the root cause by way of a plant-based diet, which I absolutely love. So we are going to talk about revolutionizing diabetes management and what that means, as well as how Jose and Diana have been able to do that through their work in the diabetes community. And my hope is that by the end of this conversation, that we will be able to change the way that diabetes is understood, how it is approached and even treated. But before we jump into the depths of this conversation, I want to get to know both of you guys on a more personal level. So Jose, I'm going to start with you. Can you give us sort of like a background story as to who you are and how you've gotten to where you are right now today, as far as like your passion for diabetes education? And then Diana, we got to hear from you, of course.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan. By the way, Medina, thank you very much for having us here. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Absolutely.
So to tell you about my first exposure to type 2 diabetes and a plant-based whole food diet, I got to take you to the very beginning. Right out of school, yeah. I needed to get some exposure to the medical field. So I ended up having an internship with these two doctors that by luck ended up being lifestyle physicians. They practiced lifestyle medicine and they were also plant-based practitioners. So it's during my time in this practice that I saw patients reverse metabolic conditions like type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease with a plant-based whole food approach. So every time that I would see a patient get better by adopting this approach, my mind would be blown. And I was like, how is it possible to get these results just by making a few tweaks to your diet? Yeah. So that is when I decided to dive deep into what is plant-based nutrition. I started going to conferences, reading books, reading research papers. And honestly, it was, I had an aha moment while I was in this practice, where I was just seeing two groups of patients. I was seeing the groups of patients that were adopting the approach and were getting better, literally within weeks or months of adopting this plant-based whole food diet. Mm-hmm. But I was also seeing the other side of the picture, which is the patients who couldn't really follow this approach, not because they didn't want to, but maybe they didn't have the support system or plan of action to follow through with it. So that is when I decided to do something about it. So the solution was out there. And the solution needed to be put on more people's hands. Right. So I decided to go ahead and, you know, create an Instagram account. Nowadays, that is the way to put your information out there.
For sure.
I also started changing my diet. So I started posting pictures of the plant-based whole food meals that I was eating. I was putting exercise routines, information about diabetes. And slowly but surely, that account started growing and growing and growing. Mm-hmm. And then I met Diana through Instagram. We crossed paths and we basically were doing the same things. Nice. So we decided to meet one day over Zoom and we hit it off. You know, she is a dietitian. I am an exercise physiologist. And that is the kind of knowledge that you need in mm-hmm. order to help somebody reverse a metabolic condition. Absolutely. So, you know, now fast forward 4 years and we have helped like thousands of people get better blood glucose. And now we hopefully are going to reach millions with our new book, The Type 2 Diabetes Revolution.
Awesome. Now I have to address the elephant in the room because I know that I have always wondered this and I am assuming that all the listeners are wondering this too. Are you guys married?
I knew you were going to ask that question.
I promise you, I have wondered that. And I was like, okay, so like, are they a husband and wife team? Are they just friends? Like, how does this work? Like, but then I heard you say you guys met over Instagram. Mm-hmm. But you guys are not married, right? Or
no, we are not.
We're
not.
No, we're friends.
Okay.
We're friends.
Yeah, we're friends and co-founders of the movement. Yeah.
Yes.
There you
yes.
go. So now I can have that on record. So now I don't have to wonder anymore. And for everyone that listens to this episode, they don't have to wonder anymore because I know that that has been like a burning question. So I like had to ask them.
Okay. Almost everyone asks us that. Yeah. So no worries. Like it's a very, I mean, it's, yeah, it's easy to definitely assume that, especially come matching in our match.
I love that. So Diana, how did you get started? Like what's a little bit more about you as far as like how you kind of got interested in diabetes wellness and all of that?
Yeah. So I really got interested in it because it runs in my family. So I've seen a lot of members of my family struggle with type 2 diabetes. And my grandfather, he passed away from diabetes complications. And so when I became a dietitian, I kind of always knew something I wanted to focus on. I wanted to really dedicate my career to type 2 specifically, especially because I realized what an impact nutrition had as I was becoming a dietitian and learning about nutrition. I learned how much of an impact nutrition had not only on the development of type 2 diabetes, but the potential it has on preventing it and also treating diabetes.
Absolutely.
And so like as a dietitian, we have such a unique role in helping people make those lifestyle changes to treat diabetes. And so I worked in different healthcare settings within diabetes. So I did some inpatient work, I did some outpatient work, and I just grew really frustrated with how little care and time and education was given to this patient population. Mm-hmm. And just to give you some examples, like working in inpatient, I literally just gave people handouts, reviewed the handouts, and that's kind of your extent. And you just hope that they are referred to a dietitian. Mm-hmm. And this is people who have been diagnosed with diabetes for the first time and know nothing about it.
Right.
And my only role in inpatient was just being like, look, you have this diagnosis. Here's a little bit of information. And then hope that they seek outside help. Mm-hmm. And then in outpatient, where you do have a little bit more time with your patients, like I worked at a community hospital in Boston, and I only got to spend 20 to 30 minutes with my patients at a time every 3 to 4 months, which is so hard to help someone make lifestyle changes when you're seeing a person that infrequently, especially
Absolutely.
When you're dealing with like a potentially life-threatening condition like diabetes. And so I just didn't feel like I was doing much of a difference. I didn't feel like I was really helping the huge problem that's out there, right? Like the numbers are astronomical now. 37 Absolutely. Million people have diabetes. And so I switched to private practice. I started my own private practice and started seeing people one-on-one. And I really liked that. I enjoyed doing that. I felt like I could really dedicate more time to people. But again, like I felt like I wasn't making that much of an impact given the scale of the problem.
Right.
And similar to Jose, it led me to social media because at that time, like this was a few years ago, or several years ago now, social media was, I was seeing like more and more dietitians go on to social media doing educating. So I went on and I started educating about diabetes through my Instagram account. And it was just a way to be able to reach more people and give free education out there. And that's how I met Jose, and he kind of explained the rest. But we realized how much our missions aligned in wanting to help people with type 2 diabetes, and how much our philosophy was similar, like helping people make those lifestyle changes, especially through plant-based nutrition and exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love how both of your guys' passion for it brought you together, which is amazing. Yeah. And that just goes to show you like the power of social media, right? Like it just, you never know. Yeah. Who is going to see your videos and what's going to resonate with whoever. So I love how that has brought both of you guys together and how you guys have both gotten experience, like clinical experience, you know what I mean? And you're seeing that there was like a missing piece where it's just like more people need to know about this and how can I be the solution for it? So I love that. Diana, what I also wanted to say too was like, I resonate with what you said about basically being an inpatient and just handing out pamphlets and hoping that they, you know, find the solution, because that was really what happened with me. Like, I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and I was, that was pretty much what it was. No one really explained to me like what I was dealing with. They never told me, you know, this is what that means, and this is what that means for, you know, yourself and for baby, and, you know, those kinds of things. And I did follow through, and I was put in contact with a dietitian, but I didn't find it helpful, unfortunately. I felt like I was being talked at instead of talked with, you know, spoken with. And so I guess I'm wondering for you, you know, as a registered dietitian, were there things that you had to kind of learn in addition to your formal education as a registered dietitian? Like, obviously there's different schooling and things. Like for me, I went to the Nutritional Therapy Association, but I also found that there were a lot of things that I had to leave on the back burner from that education and do my own research about so that I could better serve my community. Was that the same for you?
Yeah, totally. I feel like education, like it really depends, like you said, on the school that you go to, the curriculum, like the type of experience you get. And I do think my school, like I got my master's at Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, and I do think they did a really good job of presenting a lot of great research. And then through my dietetic classes, we got a lot of great classes on motivational counseling and how to counsel with patients. But I wish, of course, like it was a lot more than just a class. I do wish we had gotten maybe more information, more instruction on that. So I will say, like afterwards, though, where I felt more limited was actually working in the healthcare system. I felt like I learned all this stuff, and then the healthcare system is like, no, you can only use this handout. This is the handout we use. Yeah. This is the handout you're going to give to patients. And so I felt like, okay, wait, there's so much great information and research on a plant-based diet. Like, why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't we recommending that to our patients? And I definitely felt like the healthcare system was more restrictive for me than my actual schooling.
Gotcha.
And of course, like, I feel like because I decided to specialize in diabetes, I did need to continue to do my own research within diabetes beyond just general nutrition, which is what they teach us in school and throughout our dietetic internship. So I did feel like I needed to do that. But then I also decided to become a certified diabetes care and education specialist. Mm-hmm. And that also helped me like really dive into diabetes and learn a more well-rounded, comprehensive approach to it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Absolutely. Now, have both of you always been plant-based your whole lives, or how has that kind of evolved over time? Jose, we'll start with you.
My transition started after seeing patients reverse type 2 diabetes with a plant-based whole food approach, honestly. So this was when I was at this practice that I mentioned at the beginning. And this was about, what, six or seven years ago, that when I realized that nutrition was so closely tied to how our bodies respond to disease, that's when I decided to make this a slow and steady transition to a more plant-based whole food predominant diet. But before then, the first, 24 years of my life, I would say I was eating quote unquote healthy, but I was eating a lot of animal products and not really paying attention to what I was putting through my mouth. Mm-hmm. Now I think of my body as a supercar, like a Ferrari that needs the highest fuel possible, you know. And in my eyes now, I understand that plant-based whole food nutrition is that highest grade fuel that we can put in our bodies. So I like to perform at the highest level that I can because I do triathlons, I do a lot of physical activity, and I feel like my body responds well to this type of diet.
Now, as an exercise physiologist, before you started transitioning to a plant-based diet, I'm assuming you were still active, right? Even on a more animal-based diet. Were you still like feeling healthy, like healthy as an ox when you were, you know, when you were still eating animal-based product because you were working out, you know what I mean? Like, how was your health back then compared to how it is now?
Good question. I was very young. I mean, 23, 24, 25, you can really eat anything you want and still feel great, right?
Yeah.
So I was feeling fairly well, strong. I was a, you know, young kid.
Yeah.
And, but what I... I was smart enough to understand how nutrition was going to affect me for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I want to go ahead and eat a diet that is conducive of quality of life for the years to come.
Gotcha.
So now I eat this diet with that in mind, and I exercise with that in mind. How do I make my muscles stronger, my bones stronger? How do I make my immune system stronger? Mm-hmm. Not because I want health right now, mm-hmm. but because I want health when I'm 50, 60, 70 years old.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And beyond.
And beyond. Yeah. And beyond. Absolutely. So for both of you, Diana, I know that you said you have family members that were, you know, insulin resistant, and that's kind of what inspired you. Jose, have you had family members that are insulin resistant as well?
No, I'm lucky that in my family, there's no one with type 2 diabetes. Okay. There's also no heart disease. So I'm very lucky on that end. But one thing that I would say is that my family has always placed an emphasis on physical activity and proper nutrition. So this comes from like my grandparents that were like tennis players back in my country in Peru. Mm-hmm. And I think that aspect of not being sedentary and always eating, quote unquote, a healthy diet was passed down generations. And maybe that is a reason why I have not seen anybody in my family live with a metabolic condition.
Yeah, I love that though. I love that for mm-hmm. you. I love that for your family. And I think that's super important because I think we also have to talk about the fact that there are children now that are being diagnosed with insulin resistance. I mean, super young. Yes. I mean, I think for me, it's really hard to wrap my mind around when I think about how early people are being diagnosed. And yes, I know that type 1 diabetes is more prevalent in the younger years, but now it's looking like type 2 mm-hmm. is catching up with that. Can we explain the difference between type 1 and type 2?
Yeah. Diabetes is an umbrella term to describe chronically elevated blood sugar values. And within that umbrella of diabetes, you have type 1 diabetes, you have 1.5 diabetes, you have gestational diabetes, pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Now, type 1 and type 1.5 are the autoimmune forms of diabetes, where our immune system is attacking the beta cells of our pancreas that produce insulin. And over time, and this beta cells die out, and then insulin production falls to zero. And we all know that we need insulin in order to manage properly our blood glucose levels. Mm-hmm. So people with type 1 and 1.5 diabetes need to inject exogenous insulin mm-hmm. in order to manage their blood glucose properly. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, you have prediabetes and type 2 diabetes, which at its root have something called insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. And insulin resistance, like the name implies, is when our cells become resistant to the signals of insulin. And this dysfunction mostly develops from our lifestyle factors, yeah. from the food that we eat, how much we move, how well we sleep, how stressed we are, our hydration levels, our stress levels, all of that affects insulin resistance. But since we are eating multiple times a day for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, for desserts, for snacks, the most profound effect on insulin resistance is due to our nutrition habits, right? So when we are eating a diet that has a surplus of calories, an excess of calories coming from hyperpalatable foods that are very high in saturated fats and refined carbohydrates, we create a caloric surplus in our bodies. We create a positive caloric balance. In other words, we're putting more calories in our bodies than we're spending. And that in turn leads to our bodies to put weight on. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, we start creating certain fatty deposits inside of our muscle cells and liver cells. And these fatty deposits are not meant to be there because muscle cells and liver cells are not supposed to store large quantities of fat. Now, when this fat droplet gets too big, it starts creating insulin resistance at a cellular level. And that is the root cause of type 2 diabetes. And it came as a result of these nutrition habits that I just described. And on top of that, being sedentary and not creating that negative caloric balance that we need to maintain a proper body weight. So that is a root cause of prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. That is the majority of the cases that we're seeing right now in the United States. Diana mentioned 37 million people in the United States live with type 2, but 96 million people are living with prediabetes. And as a matter of fact, 80% of those 96 million don't even know that they have it. So they're walking around, and you know, in the United States, one out of four people that are walking around have some form of insulin resistance. They don't even know it. And sometimes it's a little too late when they find out. So we need to do something about that. And I'm glad that we're having this talk on Diabetes Awareness Month, because this is the type of talk that put the word out there for people to understand, you know, what are they eating? Is it conducive of health? Is it not? How much they're exercising? Should they increase their physical movement and so on? And these are the talks that are going to move the health of our country forward.
Before we continue today's conversation, I want to address something that might resonate with many of you in the diabetes community. When diagnosed with diabetes, it's common to feel overwhelmed and resort to drastic measures like severe diet restrictions and excessive exercise. Yet this often leads to frustration, fear, and unpredictable blood sugar levels. I have definitely been there, and it's this unsustainable approach combined with the lack of guidance from conventional medicine that fueled my passion to create my 5-day blood sugar reboot program. This program has empowered countless individuals to naturally lower their blood sugar levels by 50 to 100 or more points in literally 5 days. Inside the 5-day blood sugar reboot, you'll discover an easy to follow blueprint that tackles the four pillars of diabetes reversal in a simplified, helpful, empowering, and achievable way. To learn more, join my free masterclass on how to naturally reverse diabetes and eliminate the need for diabetic medications and receive a special promo price off of my 5-day blood sugar reboot. Check out the show notes for more details, and let's get back into today's episode.
Now, you mentioned a lot of different things. We're talking about, you know, when it relates to diabetes, we're talking about the fact that we got to be mindful of our diet. We need physical activity. We got to watch our stress levels. We got to make sure we're hydrated. We got to, you know, do all of these different things, which really contributes to the fact of like why diabetes is such a complicated illness, because there's so many things besides just diet and exercise that can impact your blood sugar levels. And I know that for me, I've seen so many people that are just kind of like, I have no clue where I'm supposed to be even focusing my energy. Like, one person says eat plant-based, one person says eat keto, one person says paleo, and all this kind of stuff. So it's just kind of like, where do I focus my energy and how do I get the fastest results? And so you just broke down what insulin resistance was basically, you know, your cells and your liver and your muscle tissues are clogged with fat, basically. How is a plant-based diet the solution for reversing that compared to the keto diet or paleo or whatever have you? Like, why does it have to be plant-based in your opinion?
I can start this one off, but, well, so let's see, where do we start? Cause there's just so many great benefits of a plant-based diet.
Right.
But, I mean, we have now such an abundance of research that shows that a plant-based diet is so effective at not only preventing type 2 diabetes, but is actually can help treat it. And it can help even reduce the complications that come about from diabetes. And so one of the reasons it works so well is that it's kind of the opposite of what causes type 2 diabetes. So Jose was talking about calorie density, these hyperpalatable foods that are so, so easy to overconsume and lead to that positive caloric balance, right? But plant-based diets, because they're really focused on whole foods, they are the opposite. They're actually nutrient dense and they're a lot harder to overconsume. So we actually can eat a whole lot of these foods and become very satiated and really full, and they keep us full for longer. So we're less likely to be snacking all the time, to be craving different foods, overeating. It just becomes a lot harder to do when we're focusing on these whole foods. And the majority of these whole foods are comprised of whole grains, legumes, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. Those are the main categories of a plant-based diet. And nutrient density, basically what it means is just that it's foods that are really high in nutrients. So things like vitamins, minerals, fiber, antioxidants, water, for a relatively lower amount of calories. And so again, we're able to consume a ton of it and not overeat or not be snacking all the time, right? But then if we dive deeper, there's all these different components of a plant-based diet that make it so effective for type 2 diabetes specifically. So one of them is the fiber content. So if we look at fiber, fiber plays so many amazing roles in our body, and yet it is one of the most under-consumed nutrients in the American diet. I think it's like 90 to 95% of Americans are not meeting the fiber recommendations. And it's so effective because, again, it helps us maintain a body weight, but it also really helps to regulate blood sugar levels, both in the short term and the long term. So for those people who are listening who aren't familiar with fiber, it's basically a type of carbohydrate that is not digested or absorbed. So it basically just travels through our gastrointestinal tract until it reaches our gut, and it serves as good food for our gut bacteria. So that's our gut bacteria ferment it and eat it up. Mm-hmm. And because it's not digested, it actually slows down the absorption of glucose into our bloodstream. And so you see a much favorable blood fluctuations compared to if you were to eat something without fiber. And so not only does it improve blood sugar in the short term, but then studies show when we eat a high fiber diet, it essentially improves every single diabetes marker out there. So it improves A1C, which is a long-term measure of blood sugar. It improves fasting blood sugar. It improves fasting insulin. It improves insulin sensitivity. So it really just has so many great benefits. Mm-hmm. And it does a great job too at lowering cholesterol. And people who have type 2 diabetes do face a higher risk of heart complications. So that's another thing that's really important about fiber. And then just to touch on two more things that a plant-based fiber, why it's so beneficial. Number two, it's just so rich in antioxidants. And antioxidants are these dietary substances that are primarily found in fruits and vegetables. And they have been shown to really improve glycemic control, including helping ourselves uptake glucose out of our bloodstream. Mm-hmm. So by eating more of a plant-based diet, we're virtually just eating so many more of these foods, so many more of these antioxidants. And then lastly, it's also just really low in saturated fat. So saturated fat is a type of fat that's found primarily in animal products, especially like red meat and full fat dairy. And we now have research to show that saturated fat is linked with insulin resistance. If we're eating an excess amount of these saturated fats, it can cause insulin resistance, which can then lead to the development of type 2 diabetes. And these diets, plant-based diets, are naturally just very low in this type of fat. Again, because it's primarily found in those animal sources. So just to summarize, because I just felt like I went on a tangent there.
We love it.
Plant-based diets, they're so nutrient dense, they're high in fiber, high in antioxidants, low in saturated fat, and just promote a healthy body weight in general as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I have found both by consuming a plant-based diet and also helping others transition to a plant-based diet is the mindset that I took on was, if I'm going to help people reverse diabetes, I want to show them how to do it in the fastest way possible. And so for mm-hmm. me, it was more so like, okay, I not only want to take you from point A to Z, but I want to help you get there in the least amount of time as possible. You know what I'm saying? And so that is why, you know, for me, I stand by a plant-based diet, because it's like, you know, yes, you're getting the nutrient density, you're getting the more natural high carb, complex carb and low fat type way of eating and different things like that. But it's also going to get you to where you want to be, you know, as fast as you want to be there. And not only that, it's going to help you to be able to maintain those results as well. You know what I mean? And so I kind of want to focus on the saturated fat part of it, because that is where I think a lot of people are getting confused when you compare like the paleo and the keto diet compared to a plant-based diet. Yeah. Can you guys kind of break down a little bit of what happens in the body with a keto diet? Because there are a lot of people that say, you know, I went keto and I put my diabetes into remission and I lost weight and, you know, I'm doing all of these kind of things. I'm done with diabetes. But we both know that that's not the truth. And I just kind of want to be able to offer a real explanation of why the keto diet may not be the best approach long term.
So, unfortunately, when people get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, one of the first diets that they come across is the ketogenic approach, right? Is the low-carb, high-fat. Now, in paper, it makes sense to reduce your carbohydrate content your intake of carbohydrates, if carbohydrates are spiking your blood glucose up, right? So it makes complete sense. You put one and one together. When I eat bananas, I get crazy spikes, hence bananas are bad for me. As a result, I'm going to go in this keto diet, which is void of carbohydrates, and I get to eat lots of fat, right? But the problem, and this is where the confusion starts, is that when you are insulin resistant, you are going to respond adversely to all forms of carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. You're going to respond adversely to the good kind, potatoes, bananas, sweet potatoes. And you're also going to respond adversely to sodas and candy and pastries and so on, right? So, but the problem is that people put all carbohydrates into that bad category. Right. And they think that they need to avoid all carbohydrates because they all spike them up and they all keep their blood glucose elevated for a long time. But they fail to realize that the banana was never at fault. The potato was never at fault. Sweet potatoes were never at fault. It's the insulin resistance at a cellular level that developed as a result of the overconsumption of calories coming from saturated fats and refined carbohydrates in combination, right? When people realize that, they're like, oh, okay, maybe I should reduce my saturated fat content, my refined carbohydrate content, and hence focus more on plant-based whole foods, which are low in saturated fats and void of refined carbohydrates, and increase my insulin sensitivity so I can respond favorably to bananas and potatoes and so on. So here is the keyword, insulin sensitivity. We want our cells to become the opposite of insulin resistant. We want our cells to become sensitive to the signals of insulin again. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do it is by diminishing that tiny fat droplet that we talked about. Right. You diminish the size of that tiny fat droplet, which then in turn restores carbohydrate tolerance. So you can eat all of this whole complex, healthy carbohydrates again without seeing crazy blood glucose spikes. Now, the problem on a ketogenic diet is that you don't do that. You are still physiologically insulin resistant due to the high amounts of fat that you're consuming on that diet. But on paper, your blood glucose is going to come down. Your A1C is going to get better on a ketogenic diet I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So those people might think that they have reversed that condition, right? Because they can go to their doctor and be like, hey, my A1C came down on this ketogenic diet. My fasting blood glucose is much better. Take me off medication. And the doctors might be like, yeah, sure. Like everything is looking great on paper. But then you go back home, you eat a banana, you eat a sweet potato, and your blood glucose goes through the roof. Yeah. What does that tell you? That you are not insulin sensitive on a glucose challenged state. Gotcha. So that is why we don't recommend people to go on ketogenic diets if they want to truly reverse the root cause of the problem. And once people understand that, they're like, oh, yeah, why did I even think about this ketogenic diet? What I want to go ahead and be able to enjoy fruits again. So go ahead and tell me all about this plant-based whole food approach that is going to reverse the root cause, right? But it's unfortunate that this keto diet, just because it's simple to understand, is the most prevalent diet out there. And then due to all of the reasons that Diana mentioned, the plant-based diet is superior in the way that it's higher in fiber, in antioxidants, in water, in vitamins, in minerals, than a ketogenic approach. So we not only want to improve somebody's glucose response, but we also want to improve somebody's overall health. Right. And we want these people to have good quality of life for the years to come. And a ketogenic diet being very high in saturated fats and animal products is not going to be conducive of good health for long term, right? And this is something that Diana loves talking about, but the blue zones of the world, which are like the area of the world where lots of people that have lived up to the age of 100 and beyond disease-free. Mm-hmm. And what do they have in common? Is the fact that they eat mostly plant-based whole foods. None of those areas of the world eat high-fat, low-carb diets. Yeah. So did I miss something on that, Diana?
No, that was perfect. We love Dan Buettner's work.
Dan Buettner has done some great research
but
on that.
Yeah, and just like we've had people who go through our program and tell us like, Thank you for giving me the ability to eat fruit again. Like,
that's the biggest thing that I hear as well. And that's crazy. I feel so bad.
Me too. Yeah.
For people that are like, that really have that belief that they can no longer eat fruit. And I'm just like,
I know.
Yeah. I want to show you the way. Speaking of that, though, I'm curious to know, because one of the biggest challenges that I face, you know, with, again, the work that we do in the diabetes community is that mindset piece. It's like that really, you know, helping people to overcome, you know, the limiting belief of I can't eat carbs and I can't eat all of these, you know, natural, very beneficial foods because they are carbs. Do you guys deal with that as well? And how do you help people overcome that, that hesitancy of eating fruit or eating rice or potatoes or pasta?
Yeah, we definitely encounter that all the time. And I think there is a lot of educating. That's a big component of it, and teaching people that it's not, you know, they're not all bad for you. Like, carbs shouldn't be categorized and demonized. We like to say this all the time, that a banana never gave anyone diabetes. Eating too many potatoes didn't give anyone diabetes. And we kind of use that analogy and we say, like, look, that's not what is causing you to have diabetes in the first place. Let's work on improving your tolerance for these carbohydrates. And by eating these carbs, you will be able to do that. And it is confusing. I mean, diabetes is a super complex illness, and there is a huge educational component to teaching people that carbs aren't the enemy. And by eating more of the good carbs, you can actually get better blood sugar readings.
Yeah. So how much carbs should someone be eating? Like, is there a limit in your guys' opinion? Because when someone tells me, yeah, go ahead and eat carbs, I'm eating all the carbs. I want the bread and the pasta and the rice and all that stuff. But there obviously has to be balance, right? Like, there has to be balance. So, like, one of the things that I teach is like the great plate method inside my programs, right?
Yeah.
And it's taking the word great, and you're using that as an acronym to tell people, you know, how to build their plates, basically. So how it works is like, G is grab a variety of non-starchy veggies, grab 2 or 3 non-starchy veggies. And then R, remember protein. E, eliminate simple carbs and sugar as much as possible. And then A, add some healthy fat. And T, take your time. So it's like breaking that down, right? And so for it, I think that it's so important, you know, when instead of just saying like, okay, yeah, go eat all the carbs, but it's just kind of like, how do you structure that so that people are still, like, the weight loss part of it is a big deal for people. And people still have this idea that if I eat too much bread or if I eat too much rice, I'm going to gain weight. So it's like, do you guys have a method that you kind of teach for that, on how to actually build a great plate or, you know, a structured plate? What should people be looking out for?
Yeah, we definitely do. We have a whole module on that, on just that topic, because that is a concern. And we see that all the time. I guess what we really focus on is we tell people, okay, let's make the majority of your plate, or at least half of it, non-starchy vegetables. Like, let's start with that. Next up, let's add a plant-based protein. And then we tell people these are the good sources of plant-based proteins are going to be things like your soy products, like tofu, tempeh, your legumes. So things like lentils, beans, chickpeas, any bean, really.
Right.
And then choose a starch. So we want to choose a high fiber starch. So whether that's a whole grain or like a potato or, you know, any kind of a starchy food, that's going to be your other component. And we use MyPlate. We like to use it in some, are you familiar with MyPlate? So we have our own basically like vegan plant-based version of that, which is just your protein should be that plant-based protein. And then your grain will be a high fiber whole food based grain. And so we take that and we teach people like the different components of that. And in the beginning, when people are more insulin resistant and are trying to improve that insulin sensitivity, we do recommend more lower glycemic indexed fruits and grains. And so that way they don't see such a big fluctuation in their blood sugar when eating more of this carb heavy way, right? Yeah. And so we do recommend like picking some low glycemic fruit, which would be things like berries, apples, pears, oranges, and then same with whole grains, like those starches, like choosing ones that are just a little bit on the lower glycemic index until they improve their insulin sensitivity and are able to improve their tolerance to all carbohydrates, not just those low GI ones.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I just want to add real quick, just to get into the how the numbers look for percentages. What we strive for is for people to eat a diet that is composed 20% of the total calories that they consume in any given day should be coming from plant-based fats. Then you're looking at 60% of total calories coming from whole complex carbohydrates and about 20% from plant-based proteins, right? But then you can go ahead and play around with those numbers, plus or minus 5-10%. But that is usually the structure that people fall naturally just by eating up plant-based whole food.
Okay, so that's what you mean by high carb. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, like 60% or more is, you know, your non-starchy veggies, but then you can also have a little bit, you know, depending on, you know, what it is that you're cooking for your family, whatever, like traditionally, like there's a lot of traditional foods, you know, that are heavier in starch. So it's like, you can't, it's not that you have to cut all of those things out. You know what I mean? It's just having that balance in there too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
I agree.
Cool. Yeah. I want to talk about, go ahead, Diana, go ahead. Yeah.
No, sorry. I was going to say something and then I forgot and now it just came back to me. But like, I feel like too, a lot of people feel like this way is super restrictive, but people who actually start adopting more of this dietary pattern, and we actually just, someone just posted this in our community forum, they actually feel more freedom when it comes to their food choices and when it comes to eating this way, because they don't have to worry so much about calories. They don't have to worry so much about macronutrients because there's so much fiber and nutrient density. They're able to eat to pretty much their heart's content without over consuming calories. And so we see that time and time again, people who start eating this way, they're able to kind of like, you know, get away from that mindset of like, okay, how many calories do I need? What are my macros? What, you know, I can't surpass this, and are able to find some more freedom when it comes to their food, which is like, we, of course, fantastic. We always want to experience that.
No, I love that too. And I was actually going to like ask that about like, okay, this way of eating is great because it doesn't require you to just be so overwhelmed. You know what I mean? Like when we're talking about getting healthy and living a healthy lifestyle, our minds automatically go towards eating less and working out more. Like, you know what I mean? Yes. And it's just like, that's actually the opposite of what you want to do, you know? Like, and Jose, maybe you can elaborate on this. Like the working out piece is just like 20% of it. It's just the tiny, like the biggest bang for your buck is going to be what you're actually putting into your body. Would you say that's the truth?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I like to tell people is you cannot exercise your diet. So definitely place an emphasis on what you're eating, again, because it's what we do many times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. And focus is still on physical movement because it's very important to move your muscles. And the reason why is because our muscles are very metabolically active, right? Which means that they burn a great amount of glucose and even more when they are activated. So it is very important to go on small walks, 15, 20 minutes, especially after a meal. That's one of the first things that we tell people in our program to do. Go on a 20-minute walk after breakfast, after lunch, after dinner. It doesn't have to be a brisk walk, just like go on a walk with a dog or like talk to somebody on the phone. That's totally fine. Just move your body more. And on top of that, add also some kind of a routine of resistance training that you can do for 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week. And that way you can increase the suctioning power of your muscles, because the more muscle mass that you have, the more glucose that you can burn at any given time. So it's a combination of both aerobic exercise and resistance training that have a synergistic effect. Again, most of the results are going to come from your diet, and then exercise is just another tool.
So when it comes to the physical activity part of it, I know that I've seen you guys share content on this, and I believe that I have too, the magic, so to speak, is obviously activating those muscles, but there are certain muscle groups that will actually help you a lot faster, I think, so to speak, if I'm correct in saying that. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, your largest muscle groups are in your legs. So when you're saying, you know, go on a 20-minute walk or do some type of resistance training, it's like, you know, you hear the people say, never skip leg day. You know what I mean? So it's just like those muscle groups are really, once they're activated, are going to really help you achieve more stable blood sugars over, you know, 48 to even 72 hours sometimes, because your body, your muscles are, you know, I think, Jose, you've referred to them as little vacuums for glucose. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Can you kind of explain a little bit how that works?
Our muscle fibers contain these tiny vesicles called GLUT4 transporters. And these vesicles usually hang out in the middle of the cell, in the middle of the muscle fiber. But when you exercise, when you move those muscles, these tiny vesicles move to the outermost layer of the cell, the periphery of the cell, and they facilitate the diffusion of glucose from the bloodstream and into the cell. It's kind of like little channels that start opening up in the periphery of the cell so glucose can be funneled into the cell. And that happens as a result of moving your muscles, activating them, and this GLUT4 transporters moving to the outermost layer. And again, I don't think I mentioned this, but these vesicles are like tiny boats that grab the glucose and bring it inside of the cell. So that is kind of like how it happens at a physiological level. But I like to explain it as our muscles are glucose vacuums, because easier way to like think about, oh, my muscle is a glucose vacuum. Great. Let me go ahead and turn on my vacuum. So I'm going to go ahead. And there's something that I like to tell people to do, which is sugar squats. When your blood glucose is a little bit high and you want to bring it down, go ahead and activate, again, the largest muscle in your body, which is, you know, housed in your lower body, your glutes, your quads, and so on. So when you do squats in place, 50 squats in sets of 10, you can greatly reduce your blood sugar right away.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So what I'm hearing you say, because I want to make sure that I got my life together too. So what I'm hearing you say is, when someone has elevated glucose levels, and obviously they're going to stay elevated because of insulin resistance, when you activate your muscles, like, you know, your quads and your hammies and all those kinds of things, your legs basically, because during like a resistance training workout, like 30 minutes, three times a week, that's breaking down that muscle. Your body has to use glucose for energy in order to rebuild that muscle back up. Is that how that's working? And then because it's pulling that glucose into the muscles, then your blood sugar levels start to become more stable. Is that what it is?
Well, yeah, when you activate your muscles, when you move the muscle fibers, they need glucose in order to move with energy, right? So that is a reason why you see a blood glucose drop it from your bloodstream, because all of that glucose is being funneled to your muscle fibers that need that energy. But the repair of those muscles actually happens with amino acids, which are the building blocks of your muscles. And that is the reason why proper nutrition after a workout is also very important, so you can repair those muscles. And that is how our muscles grow, actually, by breaking them down through exercise and then repairing them with proper nutrition, so they are ready for the next session. And then over time and with consistent exercise, these muscles grow in tone and in size. And that is very important for anybody that is living with insulin resistance or not.
Gotcha. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your guys' book, because I have the book. I don't have it like right by me, but I'm looking at it right now on my counter. There you go. I want to talk about this type 2 diabetes revolution cookbook, and not just cookbook, but complete guide to diabetes management. Now, I had to ask this. Jose, you are the exercise physiologist. Diana, you are the registered dietitian. I want to know, do your guys' roles overlap? Like, did it overlap when creating this cookbook? Or Diana, you were like, no, Jose, take a back seat. I got this. I'm gonna do all the rest. It's like, who played what role in the creation of this cookbook?
I mean, yeah, I feel like I definitely took Marge with a lot of the recipes. But yeah, no, it was definitely a joint effort. And
yeah, I love that.
Obviously helped a lot with this. But yeah, like as you mentioned, it's more, we wanted to make it more than just a cookbook because like people, like we've talked about, diabetes is so complex and so many people don't get the proper education about it. And you go online or even social media and there's so much misinformation. Yeah. And so we wanted to make it a guide as well so people can understand what diabetes is, how it develops, the risk factors for it, why diet plays such a big role, how and why a plant-based diet works also really well to place diabetes into remission. So the whole first part is all about that. And yeah, so again, like we just wanted to make it a little bit more comprehensive than just a cookbook.
Yeah, for sure. I will say that compared to a lot of the cookbooks that I have or have seen, that this one, because of that, I think it's like the first, I don't know, 30 pages or so. Because of that first thing, that really sets your guys' cookbook apart from all the other ones that I have seen. I will honestly say that. And I just love, because you can tell that it really was a labor of love and you guys really do care about the education piece, because I find that there's no lack of information. Like if you want to find it, you will find it on the internet. But I think where people kind of get confused is the execution part. You know what I'm saying? Like going from knowing what to do and actually following through and doing the things you know to do. And so through this cookbook, I find that that is such a tremendous help for not only do you understand what you're doing or why you're doing it, but this is how you actually do it too, because you guys included a meal plan in the book too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, why did you guys want to do that?
Great question. We get asked about meal plans all the time. People love meal plans. And I think it's because it gives them that structure, gives them that plan of how to execute. Like it shows them what kind of foods to eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner. And so we wanted to include a generic meal plan in our book using the recipes, of course, from the book.
Yeah.
So we did that. But then as we were writing this meal plan, we're like, wait, we can't just write a meal plan. We need to, like, there's a lot of issues with meal plans, right? Like from what we've seen and experienced through our programs, like meal plans can cause a lot of waste, a lot of food waste, right? Because you buy a lot of ingredients and then, you know, you end up not using all of them. Mm-hmm. And then they can be really cumbersome. Like you can spend hours in the kitchen sometimes for meal plans. And so we're like, okay, if we're going to include a meal plan, we need to be really smart about this. Let's figure out a way to really reduce food waste, because I mean, especially nowadays with food costs just being so high. And then we also, how we did that was for every week of the meal plan, and I'm holding up the book here, but we have sections on how to use up leftover ingredients. So thank you. We like give tips on like, okay, with the leftover spinach, kale, onions, bell peppers, you can freeze that and use them for smoothies, soups, or stir fries in the future. So we have little tips like that for any leftover ingredients. And then also we decided on purpose not to include snacks in the meal plan itself. But we actually show you how to use the leftover ingredients to create healthy, well-balanced snacks. So for example, like let's say, so this week you have to buy a bag of carrots, right? But you only need to use 3 carrots in one of the recipes. But then if you look at the snack section, it'll say use those extra carrots to pair with that hummus that you also bought, that you're probably going to have extra of that for your snacks.
I love that. That is so creative.
Thank you.
As you can tell, Marina, Diana was the mastermind behind the whole cookbook. I absolutely love that.
Now I have to ask you, okay, do you guys have a favorite recipe in the book? What's each of you guys? I don't know if it's the same thing for both of you, but like, what's your favorite?
Yeah. I'll tell you mine. Mine is the stuffed bell peppers with lentils and cashew sour cream. That is hands down my favorite. I'm trying to find
cashew
it so I can show you
cream.
How it looks.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Check that out.
Ooh, I love that. Okay, Diana, what's your favorite?
Okay. So my favorite is, I am just such a big fan of quesadillas, and we decided to make like a healthier version of them with black beans and with a cashew nacho cheese sauce. Yes. And they're just loaded with veggies. I mean, this recipe is phenomenal. I highly recommend it.
Now, how long did it take you guys, like from beginning to end, to really execute this? Because I got to imagine, like, you had to sit down, write out all the recipes, practice, you know, cooking them and how they're going to look. Yep. And then the photography, like, how long did all that take?
I from start to like publish date, a little over a year.
Okay.
It was a fast turnaround.
Yeah,
I mean, because a lot of that time also includes like the publishers sending the book out to get printed. And I think that whole process takes a few months in itself. So I would say, like, yeah, from start to finish, like, to when we signed the contract to when the book was released, it was like a year and a month, like 13 months. Yeah.
Was it like a pretty demanding schedule? Like,
yeah. Yes.
Was it like every Sunday we got to meet with people?
Basically, yes. It was a lot of,
I mean,
there's just a lot of information in this book. Like, there's over 100 recipes, and then there's the whole guide. And then there was a lot of thought that went into the meal plan. There's also like a whole meal prep section for every week of the meal plan. Yeah. So it was a lot of labor of love. It was a big labor of love for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine. Now, okay, Jose, you just showed up for the cover. We are not blaming you for that, okay? Because this is a lot of hard work.
And I was eating all of the recipes to make sure they were tasty.
That is a very important job, okay? He had a really important job. So for those of you listening, he put in some labor, okay? He had to eat the food. He had to make sure that it was good. He had to put himself together to smile nice. You know, listen, there's a lot of effort that goes into this.
Right.
Now, you guys also, what I wanted to ask really quick before we wrap up, you guys also went through like a name change, right? Like,
yes.
You guys started as Reversing T2D, and now it is the Type 2 Diabetes Revolution. What inspired the name change?
The book.
Everything started with naming the book the Type 2 Diabetes Revolution, but then we asked ourselves, like, what is our movement doing? And our movement is, at its root, it's truly revolting against the old paradigm that people living with type 2 diabetes have been led to believe. That paradigm that tells them that type 2 diabetes is a chronic progressive disease that they're going to have to live with forever, or have to be on medications for the rest of their lives and eventually end up on insulin and end up with diabetes complications, or the fact that all carbohydrates are bad for them. So we, at our root, we want to go ahead and break that old paradigm. So we decided to call our book the Type 2 Diabetes Revolution. And then a few months ago, we're like, why not just change the name of all of our social media channels to Type 2 Diabetes Revolution? So now people can find us all over the place on Instagram, on TikTok,
available.
On YouTube, on
like
Facebook.
Across every channel and the domain. So we're like, okay, we could be consistent across everything.
Right. It was meant to be. Absolutely. I love that for you guys. So, okay, really quick, what are the top three tips? We have listeners who are going to be listening to this for the very first time. Maybe they're newly diagnosed, or maybe they're some OGs and they've had diabetes for a really long time. What are the top three tips that you would give for someone who is like, I have no idea where to start? What can I do to get a handle on my blood sugar levels and to be able to maintain this long term? What is the biggest, the most important things that you would tell someone to start with?
I'll start with number one, which is understand what is your why. What's the reason as to why you're doing this lifestyle change? That is the most important thing, believe it or not, and it has nothing to do with nutrition or exercise. What is your why? Write it down. And for most people, it's like, I want to go ahead and do this lifestyle change because I want to live long so I can see my kids grow up, so I can play with my grandkids, so I can enjoy the golden years of my life with my significant other. Those are big reasons that are going to drive you forward when it gets a little bit tough. So lifestyle change can be tough some days, but if you have that why chasing you, that is going to push you forward. You're going to continue doing what you're supposed to do in order to get the results that you want. So that's number one.
Sure, I'll give a nutrition tip for number two. I will say diversify your proteins. So if you're someone who eats a lot of animal-based proteins, can you make a few switches, a few swaps for some plant-based proteins? Because by doing so, you're kind of doing two really impactful things. Number one, you're increasing the fiber in your diet. And number two, you're also decreasing the saturated fat in your diet. And both of those components work really, really well to improving your insulin sensitivity and reversing insulin resistance. So you can start small. You can just swap one or two proteins a week, or you could try something like a meatless Monday. A lot of people love meatless Monday. Yeah. But yeah, just making that simple swap can have really profound effects.
I love that.
I'll give number three, and I think it's fitting that I talk about exercise. walking after meals is going to be your best friend. There's a lot of research out there showing that people who walk for just 10 to 15 minutes after a meal end up with better A1C and fasting blood glucose down the line. And a bonus, I'll give you the bonus, go ahead and follow Queen Eats Nutrition on Instagram and Type 2 Diabetes Revolution on Instagram to get the latest information on plant-based nutrition and type 2 diabetes.
I love that. I love the shameless plug. I love it. So what I'm hearing you guys say is, listen, it's really, really simple. You're not having to do super over-the-top things in order to start seeing drastic changes in your blood sugar levels. It really is honoring the baby steps and just being consistent with those little things. That is going to help you the most in the long run. You guys, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I want to thank both of you guys for your time. And also let everybody know, I know that they can find you on Instagram, but if people are wanting to just dive into your world a little bit more, how do people find you? How can we work with you? Give us all the information, basically.
Yeah. So we're Type 2 Diabetes Revolution on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. Our website is type2diabetesrevolution.com. We have a really great blog with a lot of great resources on there. And then you can also, we have a lot of free resources too. So you can watch some workshops. We also have some free guides that you can download. So we have a lot of free stuff that you can take advantage of on our website.
Love that. Love that. Now, are you guys still running your programs?
Yes, we sure are.
So if you are looking for someone to really hold your hand and guide you through this process of reversing diabetes by addressing the root cause, jump inside one of their programs. I believe that everybody can find the information link in bio in your social media platform. And I'll also have all of the information in the show notes and everything. So if you click the show notes, I'll make sure I have links to all their information and how you can work with them in the whole nine, because you both are absolutely incredible. It is an honor to know you guys. And I'm so proud of all of the work that you are doing in the diabetes community. And if no one has told you, I mean, I'm sure that you guys have people raving about you all the time, but thank you. Like, thank you so much.
And thank you for everything. And likewise, thank you for everything.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Diabetes Unplugged. If you enjoyed this conversation, follow me over on Instagram to join the ongoing discussion sparked by this week's episode. You can find all my social media handles in the show notes, and you can also show love by simply giving me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And for more insightful blogs, support, and other digital downloads, head over to queeneatsnutrition.com. Until next time, take care and keep striving for your health goals. See you next week.